your money's worth. You're getting your money's worth? Okay, it's the 12th of March. And, okay, let's get started. Come on, Linda, sit down. Okay, we're doing, you know, after the shellacking a couple of days ago, it's not so bad, you know. We're still up 4% for, not bad for 8 weeks, not bad. I take 2% a month. But I think the volatility is just starting to brew. People are starting to get nervous and fear and greed, greed and fear and greed. Okay, a couple of announcements. There's a video game tournament on Saturday afternoon. Is it Saturday afternoon?
I'll take care of it.
You'll take care of it?
Hey, guys, we're having a video game tournament in Club Web this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. You're all welcome to be here. It's going to be $5 per entry. There'll be cash prizes. There'll be giveaways.
And pizza.
Pretty much every competitive game you can think of will be there. Street Fighter 4, Ultimate Marvel, Mario Kart 8, Super Smash New League of Legends. There's something for everybody. We're actually having a meeting today at room 223 after this class at 11 to sort out the final details.
So check it out.
If you're interested,
where is it going to be?
Check it out.
Where is it going to be?
It's
going
to be at the Student Union over here
Student
on
Union.
Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. What's up, James?
Any sports? Like football, right?
FIFA. There'll be FIFA.
Soccer. John Madden.
Probably not Madden. You know how people get with those games.
How do they get with those games? Okay, they get insane. Okay, and then International Business Day is next Tuesday. It starts, I think, before our class, but then goes on until about 2 o'clock. So check that out for those of you who want to get into international business. There's the assignment assignment for Chapter 5 are due today. And then maybe next Thursday. I don't know. I'm more interested in you understanding this because we're at the heart of the course, folks, right now in valuation. But you've got a lot of studying to do with Chapter 5, and then we'll see how much we get done today and then Tuesday. And then I have some extra stuff we can throw into Chapter 6, which will not be on the exam. But you got a lot of calculations to do over the next couple of weeks, so stick with us. Now, we're going to start Chapter 6, so you have a lot of studying to do for Chapter 5, but who wants a good joke? Huh? Who wants a good joke? Anybody? Who wants a good joke? Well, you can't get them from me. Sorry, apologize. But this will be the last bar joke, okay? We'll transition from bar jokes to Battle of the Sexes, which are actually my favorite jokes. So this guy walks into a bar. See, it's still a bar joke, but it's a Battle of the Sexes joke. And he's really sad. And the bartender says, "Hey, buddy, what's wrong? Why are you so sad?" And the guy says, "Oh, man, my wife and I had a terrible knockdown, drag-out fight. And she told me she wasn't going to talk to me for a whole month." And the bartender said, "That's so sad." He said, "Yeah, the month is up tonight." Just the difference of men and women, you know, is so funny. Okay, so common stock valuation. Boy, oh boy, are you going to learn some have some extras? You're going to learn some techniques that most people don't even know exist. They don't even know these things exist. And you will talk to people who invest in stocks, and they'll just you'll just kind of look at you like, "What? What are you talking about?" When you ask them a question such as what's the PE or what are the discounted cash flows looking like, and they'll just kind of shake their head. They don't know what they're talking about. Does that mean you're going to be a better investor? Well, I hope so. You know, I sincerely hope so, but it's not a guarantee because, as we're going to see, it ain't easy, folks. Even the pros have a whole lot of trouble with it. And this guy, with over 35 years of experience, says it's best. Value matters. You ignore value at your risk. Yes, dear students, you can play the momentum game up, down, and maybe make some bucks, probably lose a whole bunch. But if you think of value over longer periods of time, and we keep saying 3, 4, 5 years, and we'll see why, you should do well. Now, you might not be the next Peter Lynch. You might not be the next Warren Buffett. I hope you are. I hope someone from my class becomes the next super investor. But the cool thing is you don't have to be a super investor to do well. You don't have to be, the back at the business. You can do well and just be happy with what you have. We'll see. I'll hope if this thing works. Okay. Now, stock valuation. The stock valuation, that's the part, that's what we're doing in chapter 6. It's the process by which the underlying value of a stock is established on the basis of its forecasted risk and return performance. At any given time, the price of a share of common stock depends upon investors' expectations about the future behavior of the stock or security. And remember, we were taking a look at PE and saying this represents, more than any other statistic, what people believe the future is going to be for this stock. A fundamental assertion of finance, and there's that word, fundamental, we'll talk about that later on, as opposed to technical assertion. A fundamental assertion of finance holds that the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. And with stocks, the future cash flows are earnings. With bonds, the first future cash flows are interest payments. When we get the bonds, we'll see that instead of earnings with stocks, we look at interest payments with bonds. The worth of a company is primarily based on the earnings the company will produce in the future. Ah, therein lies the rub. Do any of us know what's going to happen in the future? It wouldn't be called the future. It would be called the past. The most fundamental influence, this is from one of the books we discussed last week, Burton Malkiel, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. The most fundamental influence, there's that word again, on stock prices is the level and duration of the future growth of earnings and dividends. However, future earnings growth is not easily estimated, even by market professionals, even by the people in the company. If you went and asked a company that made, widgets or whatever, let's say a company that made chairs, say, what are you going to earn next year? And they say, well, tell us how many chairs we're going to sell, and we'll tell you how much we're going to earn. You understand? They would say, we don't know the future. So if someone were to ask you, what is the most important factor in determining the value of a company? In a few words, you could say future earnings, or you could also say future dividends, because from the earnings stream come the ability of us to be rewarded with dividends. But do any of us know what's going to happen in the future? No. So is valuing stock going to be easy? Everyone says say no. Or you could say hell no. Do any of us know what's going to happen in the future?
No.
So is valuing stock going to be easy?
No.
No, it's not. It's very difficult. Security analysis is the process of gathering and organizing information and then using it to determine the value of a share of common stock. And that was the name of one of the books last week that we looked at. That's the graduate level book. Don't tackle that one first. Intrinsic value is the underlying or inherent value of a stock as determined through security analysis. The question for us now is, which technique do we use? Which method, measure, does one use to determine the intrinsic value of a company? Do we use future dividends? Do we use potential capital appreciation? Do we use the price-to-earnings ratio or the other ratios that we're going to take a look at? Do we look at past price performance? How much is the risk? Value is in the eye of the beholder. One person looks at a stock and says, that's a great value. Other person says, no, it's too darn risky. Or no, it's not risky enough for me. Fundamental analysis. This is the definition of the word fundamental. It has nothing to do with religion, folks. I guess you can. No. When you talk fundamentalists who believe that the world was created in 6 days, no. Examination of a firm's accounting statements and other financial and economic information to assess the economic value of a company's stock. So examples of some of the fundamentals. The competitive position of the company. Is it CVS? Or Walgreens or Wrong Aid? I'm sorry. Rite Aid, right? Yeah. Is it Costco, Walmart, or Kmart? You understand? Yeah. The growth prospects for a company and its market, the profit margins, the company's earnings, what assets are available, the capital structure, which is a fancy word of saying how much debt do they have, how much of the company do they own, and how much do creditors own. Simply put, the value of a stock is influenced by the performance of the company that issued the stock. Now, to me, this makes perfect sense. But there's a whole other world we'll get to in a couple weeks called technical analysis that they don't care about this. They're not interested in that. They look at squiggles on the screen, and we'll get to those people later on. Financial ratio analysis is the first analysis we're going to do. What they did in chapter 6 is they put this at the end. But the reason I put it first is that it's conceptually easier than the dividend discount models, which they put at the beginning of the semester, the beginning of the chapter. So I'm doing the back of the chapter first, for those of you who have the book. One method of security analysis involves looking at certain financial ratios. Now, after chapter 6, we spend an entire chapter on more financial ratios. We're going to look at the price ratios and the price-to-earnings ratio being the most popular. Financial ratios give us a quick and easy method for comparing one company to other companies within their industry and the stock market as a whole. The problem with financial ratios is that there is no single financial ratio that can adequately sum up or summarize the overall general state of affairs, the situation, the predicament that the company finds itself in. You have to think of it like a stew, looking at all the financial ratios and comparing them to other companies in that industry and the market as a whole. And as I said, we'll do the price ratios first. So, to review, the price-to-earnings ratio is the most popular stock market statistic. And we said that PEs were generally in the 5 to 15 range, but now they're in the 14 to 20 range. Anything greater than 20 was unusual. But then there are certain times in the late 1990s, in the late 1960s, late 1920s, that PEs went to the moon. So GE, you ever heard of them? As a couple weeks ago, GE's PE was 16.8. Now, what can we say about that? That's about average, right? Not too high, not too low. People are happy about it, but they're not ecstatic. GM, 22.8. So people are thinking, GM is going to do well, right? It better. And then how about Google? 25.8. So investors are saying, we think the prospects for Google are better than GE or GM. Now, have you heard of GoPro? The only thing that these things have in common is they all start with the letter G, that's all. Okay. 48.9. So what are investors saying about GoPro? Yeah, they're rocking and rolling. And so that is an indicator that we look at. We see that investors believe the future is bright. Now, what happens if the earnings keep continuing to grow? What's going to happen? Yippee! We're all going to be happy because the stock's going to zoom. What happens if a competitor comes out or for some reason GoPro was found cooking the books or all of a sudden their cameras stop working? What's going to happen to that stock price? You understand? So you are starting to understand risk versus return, risk versus return. Historically, as we said, PEs were in the 5 to 12 range. Now 14 to 20 is typical. So historically, a PE ratio was supposed to match its growth rate. If a company was growing at 20% per year, then a PE of 20 was justified. During the internet bubble, many companies had PE ratios in the hundreds. And I'll never forget looking down and seeing eBay's PE on the screen, 10,000. And I thought, okay, this ain't going to last. You know, it's not going to last. And sure enough, eBay, it's still around. Many of the dot-coms are gone. But eBay's stock price lost about 87, 89%. It's coming back. Growth stocks, as we said, typically have high PE ratios. Value stocks have low PE ratios, but that goes back to our discussion of growth versus value. A value stock might not necessarily be a good value, the way we like to use, or at least I like to use the term, whereas a growth stock with a high PE, maybe GoPro is a darn good value. You see all your friends going out and buying GoPros and putting them on their helmets and the like, and they're waterproof too, right? They can go underneath the water. Yeah, that's the idea. But they're not cheap. How much are they, like $600? $300, $400? Yeah. Okay. The P/E ratio tells how long it will take in years, assuming no changes in earnings, for the company to earn back its price. A P/E of 3 will take 3 years. A P/E of 20 take 20 years. Yeah, but everything changes all the time. Now, the next one we're going to take a look at is price to cash flow. Wait a minute. What's the difference? Well, you accountants know that earnings and cash flow are not necessarily the same thing. In fact, they usually aren't. Earnings are what the IRS allows us to declare, and that's what we have to pay taxes on. But cash flow is typically different, especially because of depreciation. You accountants, don't worry, we're not going to do any trial balances or anything, don't worry. But do you remember accounting? Did you write out a check to depreciation? No, but you got to reduce your earnings so you pay fewer dollars in taxes. But that money's still coming in the door. So you will hear people talk about good quality or bad quality earnings. Because depending on depreciation and many other accounting transactions, a company may be making tremendous income and their checkbook is going down. The cash is going out the door. Now, how could that happen? Well, a tremendous example is Lucent Technologies. You might have heard of Lucent Technologies. They used to be called Bell Labs, Western Electric. They were the company that worked with AT&T. They were part of AT&T many years ago. And they would build the equipment for AT&T. They were broken up along with the Baby Bells and AT&T many years ago, back in the 90s. 80s is when the Baby Bells left, and then AT&T spun off Bell Labs and Western Electric, called it Lucent Technologies. In the late 1990s, Lucent Technologies was making money hand over fist. But their cash flow was going down. Now, how could that be? Well, many of these new companies, these telecommunication companies, you ever hear of Windstar? There's a good reason why they've been bankrupt for 15 years, or 14 years. But these companies were getting into the telecommunications, internet, telephony, telephones, cellular phones, and they were brand new companies. They didn't have histories. They didn't have any earnings. No bank would touch them, would lend them money. They couldn't sell bonds. So they would go to Lucent and said, hey, will you sell us $2 billion worth of telephone equipment? And Lucent said, sure. But one problem, we don't have the money now. We can't pay you $2 billion and we can't borrow it. Would you allow us to pay you the $2 billion over the next 20 years? And Lucent said, all right. So you see what position they were put in? They're now the bank. They get to book the $2 billion of sales, but it's going to be paid to them over the next 20 years. And Windstar, and I can't remember some of the others, Quest, I can't remember the names, they're gone. They're all gone. They give them back the, here's your $2 billion of equipment back. Do they want the equipment? No, it's already obsolete. And so Lucent almost disappeared. They didn't quite. They stuck around because they still build the best telephone equipment in the world. You understand? Am I going too fast? Okay, good. The next one is price to sales. Price to sales, P/S. And the price to sales became pretty popular in the late 1990s because many of the internet companies never had any earnings. They probably wouldn't have any earnings for 4 or 5 or 10 years, if ever. And so they were saying, well, look at their price to sales. Their sales are growing. They're still losing money. Isn't that great? We're losing money on everything we sell, but that doesn't matter. We're selling more. How long is that going to last? Not very long, and many of those companies are gone. And then the last one is price to book value. PB, price to book value. Not Pacific Beach, but price to book value. And the idea of price to book value is that the company intact should be worth more than the market price. And when you looked at the book value for the assignment chapter 5, you noted that all the company's market price was well above the book value, right? Am I going? Yeah, I could check it out. Check it out. You'll see that a company intact is worth more. Typically, 2 to 3 is good. And sometimes you'll see 7 or 8. The company's worth 8 times more than the book value. And so It used to be, traditionally, historically, investors would get nervous if the book value was the market value was much higher than the book value. But now people realize that this is part of the game. Today, it is rarely close to the price of the stock. In fact, if it goes below, if the market price, this price of the stock goes below the book value, there's a real danger of the company being raided, liquidated, and put out of business. So this makes sense, everyone? Like, okay, because now we're going to start using it to predict prices. To predict future stock price using price ratios, you multiply a historical price ratio by the expected future value price ratio denominator. Right? It's harder to understand and explain and comprehend than it is to do the calculation. The calculations in this chapter are actually pretty darn easy, but you don't know what the hell you're doing. What the hell am I doing? And so we'll do them, and then hopefully the understanding will come. Let's take a look at the sixth edition problem for Intel. This is late 2009. So we're looking at Intel. In late 2009, the stock price was $19.40. Now, how can we use these price ratios to estimate, to come up with a valuation 1 year later? Well, we go back and we see that the earnings per share for Intel were $1.92. All right, that's published. I'm sorry, not $1.92, 92 cents. Can you take a joke? 92 cents. And we go back 5 years, and the five-year average P.E. ratio was 20.96. The analysts, or Intel, or somebody, or maybe us, we think that they're going to grow their earnings by 8.5%. So we think the earnings growth is going to be 8.5%. How can we come up with the price of the stock for next year? What we do is we take the historical P.E. average, which is 20.96. Got your calculators out? Multiply that times the projected earnings per share next year. Well, if the earnings per share are 92 cents today, and we expect them to grow by 8.5%, what we would do is we'd multiply that times 1 plus 8.5%. 8.5% is 0.085, so 1.085. So go ahead, calculate that. Make sure I did it right. 20.96 is, going back 5 years, is the average price-to-earnings ratio. The current earnings per share are 92 cents, and we expect the earnings per share to grow next year to 1 plus 8.5% of 92 cents. And you come up with a price of?
22.74.
Uh-oh. Okay, maybe you have a bad calculator. Check it out. Maybe it was made in Santee. You've got to be careful. Try it. 2092? So what we're saying, folks, is if indeed Intel does grow its earnings by 8.5% next year, and the average P.E. is what the P.E. is next year, then we expect the price to be 2092. Is this starting to make sense? It's a little tricky to understand, but the calculation is actually very easy. You take the P.E. ratio for the last 5 years, you multiply it by what you think the earnings are going to be next year, knowing that it's a guess, and we're told by the analyst, or we're told by Intel, or we look at our numbers and we see that they're growing, or maybe we check somebody else, some other securities source, and they say it's going to grow by 8.5%. So you multiply the P.E. of the last 5 years times the earnings for this year plus multiplied times 1.085, 1 and 8.5%. 100% plus 8.5%. I just made it worse for you, didn't I? Questions? Was that hard? No, it's actually pretty straightforward. Once you can do the count, just plug in the numbers. And you go, okay, there's a number. Now, the next one is exactly the same, but instead of price to earnings, we're going to use price to cash flow. And we go back into 2009, and we find that the late 2009 cash flow per share, that's what CFPS stands for, was $1.74. And you go back 5 years, and you find that the average price to cash flow was 10.85, and that the analysts or Intel or we believe that the growth for the next year is going to be 7.5%. So we do exactly the same. Notice, the cash flow for Intel is a lot higher than the earnings per share. Why is that? Depreciation. Companies like Intel and car companies, it costs them $1 billion or $2 billion to make the first thing. But then once they make the first one, how much does it cost them? A couple bucks. Right, it makes them cost them a couple bucks to make the next chip. And that's why they have huge depreciation costs. Because that $2 billion of capital investments, they have to depreciate, you accountants. See, the more you know about accounting, the easier, the better, I think, an investor you'll be. But I don't want to be an accountant. Okay, so we do the exact same thing. We take the 10-year, the 5-year average, which is 10.85, multiply it by the current cash flow per share, $1.74, times 1 plus 7.5%. Now, does everybody understand how we went from 1 plus 7.5% to 1.075? Did I lose anybody on that little chop right there? Okay, if you do those three calculations, what number do you get? Did I get it right? 20.29, which is, you know, pretty close to what the previous model said. Make sense? Ready for the next one? You excited? I don't know. You're kind of looking at me funny. Okay, let's continue. The last one is price to sales. So we go back and look at late 2009, and we see that the sales per share, do you hate those acronyms? I'm not a big fan of acronyms or abbreviations, was $6.76. And going back 5 years, we find that the average sales per share, price to sales ratio was 3.14, and they expect sales to grow 7%, sales growth. So we do the exact same thing. We say, give me the average for the last 5 years, 3.14, multiply it by the current sales, and multiply that times 1 plus 7%, or 1.07, and we get 3.14 times 6.76 times 1.07, or $22.71. Everybody got that? Which is actually a little bit higher than the previous two models. All right? Now, have you got any questions? Like, how reliable is this plan? Right? Reality check. Can we reasonably assume that the formulas on the previous slides will give us realistic figures? Well, it turns out that some companies, yes, and other companies, no. But there are other countless factors at work. It's like trying to predict the weather. Only worse. The major assumption, think about it, the major assumption of this model, of these models, is that the price models, the price multiples will remain constant. We're using the 5-year average. We're using averages without taking into account the variations and standard deviations. It's like putting one foot in a bucket of ice and the other foot in a bucket of boiling water and saying, well, on average, I'm okay. Right? Is it reasonable to expect these predictions from these models to be accurate if the variances of the average are large? No, because you don't know what the PE is going to be next year. You don't know what the price to cash flow is going to be next year. You don't know what the price of sales is going to be next year. For the record, The price of Intel 1 year later in late 2010 was around $20.50, which is not bad, huh? Well, you know what? One out of four ain't good. Because if you go back to the third, the fourth, and the fifth editions, they were way off the mark every time. In the third edition, they predicted, they predicted $19.61, $27.50, and $31.63, and 1 year later it was $33.50. In the fourth edition, they predict $50.84, $43.49, $49.19, it was $17. That was 2008. Right? And then in the fifth edition, they thought it was $25, $25, $29, and it was $20. Notice that the third edition was too low, the fourth and the fifth were too high. Given that you gives you lots of confidence in the price models, huh? Well, no. Take heart. If you go look at the Disney predictions in the fourth and the fifth and the sixth, they didn't do the Disney in the third edition. But if you go back and look at the fourth and fifth and the sixth for the Disney, they were a whole lot closer. Now, what does that tell you? Disney is a more constant, you know, every once in a while they'll come out with a huge blockbuster movie, which will make, they're making a ton of money off of this Frozen thing. But normally, I mean, people go there to spend a ton of money on crap from China and stuff, and buy the videos and stuff. So they have a more constant, whereas Intel's at the vagaries of what's going on in the chip industry, and that's always crazy. And they're kind of, you know, they were making all their money off of PCs, and now they're trying to break into the mobile market, which they're actually doing. They're a pretty smart company. They're actually doing okay. But the Apple and the Google pad, the iPads and the Nexus and those things, Android. Do they use Intel processors? Not yet, but Intel's pushing to get in there. Okay, questions, thoughts, ideas, comments, criticisms. You like this? All right, so what we're going to do now, I know, you're kind of quiet. It gets really quiet. I don't know what to think. But let's let's do some problems together. How are we doing for time? Great, we're actually doing pretty well. I am not trying to push you folks. I want you to learn this stuff. If we have to take more time. See, we're already a week behind because the first week was missing a day, and then I missed a day, so that's already put us a week behind. So this is worksheet number one. There's also a worksheet number two. There are answer keys and commentaries on the website, and you're going to do this over and over and over again. Right? Nod your head yes. Right? You didn't get it? I skipped you guys? Well, I missed these guys. I meant them to throw them that way. That's okay. Let's turn this off. No, not turn it off, but just... Ding! Okay. Number one. Who will read number one for me? Don't everybody jump at once. Okay, I'll read it. The price of We Got Burnt and How is currently $32 per share. You've heard of that, haven't you? $32 per share. All right, the earnings per share for this current year are $2.25. And their five-year average PE is 18. Now, the analysts tell us that they believe the earnings, or we believe the growth next year is going to be 5%. So how do we use these? It's actually, when you do it, it's pretty straightforward. You just plug in the numbers. What's the five-year average? 18. What's the current earnings per share? $2.25. And what's the growth rate? 5%. So 1 plus 5%, which is 1.05. So multiply 18 times $2.25 times 1.05. And next year we believe the stock is going to be worth $42.50. Yippee! Make sense? Piece of cake, isn't it? But when I first explained to you the process, you went, huh? I know, it's harder to comprehend what you're doing than it is to do it. Okay, number two is the same company, But in this case, we're looking at the cash flow per share. Cash flow per share. Cash flow per share is equal to $2.80, more than the earnings per share because of depreciation. And we go back 5 years, and we find that the average price to cash flow ratio is equal to 14. The analysts, or we, believe that the cash flow growth next year will be 6%. So who wants to tell me what to do? Don't everybody jump at once. Christina, what's the 5-year average? What's your name, Christina?
What?
What's your name, Christina?
That's my name.
Yeah. What's your name? Christina, what's the 5-year average price to cash flow? So yeah, sometimes I think the students think I'm asking something. It's right there. What's your name, Bob? I don't know. What does he mean by that? What's your name? Oh, Bob. Okay. Okay. So what's the price to cash flow ratio average? Or wants to say 14. And then what's the cash flow per share? $2.80. And then what's the growth rate? 6%. So 1 plus 6%, or 1.06. Yeah. It's actually pretty easy, folks. 41.52? Says Daniel? 55?
55,
I'm sorry.
552,
okay. Okay. And then the last one is exactly the same idea, except what we're going to do now is use price to sale. So their sales per share, that's what SPS stands for, sales per share for this year is what? $3.20. And going back 5 years, the average price to sales, P/S, is 13, and we believe, or someone tells us, we expect their sales growth to be 8%.
Yep.
So we do the exact same thing. What's the 5-year average? Everyone should say 13. What's the sales per share? 320. 1 plus 8%, which is 1.08. And what do we expect the price to be? $44.99. 93. I'm sorry. So all are much more optimistic of what the current price is. They're expecting great things from We Got Burnt and Hell. Okay. Because now, dear students, I'm not a big fan of the price ratios. I'll tell you right off the bat. All they're basically saying is that we believe that the price ratio is going to stay the same. The PE, or the price to cash flow, or the price to sales. And as we saw, that's not a very good assumption for some companies, especially high-growing companies in volatile industries. But maybe for slow growth companies or companies in industries that are much more stable, such as Disney, they are good things to use. Now, but this one, these models, they're just not just one model. These are it, folks. You are entering the inner sanctum, the temple of the dividend discount models. Doesn't that sound exciting? The shares of stock are valued on the basis of the present value of the future stream of dividends. Right? I'm sorry, let's say that again. Shares of stock are valued on the basis of the present value of the future dividend streams the stock is projected to produce. What are we talking about here? Well, remember, stocks, not all of them, pay us dividends, right? And so what we're looking at now is how much is the stock worth given how much dividends it's going to pay us. Now, again, you guys have to be cool because you have to give it to those guys now. All right? And so they go by various names, dividend discount models, dividend valuation models, discounted cash flow models. Oh, by the way, on this handout I'm giving you now are all the formulas, and the first three, obviously, are the price ratio models. Okay, so pass these out. If you recall from the very beginning, we said that the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Therefore, dividend discount models should be extremely popular, right? Well, during the 1990s, when everybody wanted capital appreciation, look, my stock's going up 40% a year. I don't care about dividends. Don't pay me dividends. These people who had adhered to these models were old-fashioned and outdated, fuddy-duddies. You might have heard the term old economy, but you guys were, many of you were kids then. But you might have heard old economy. You know, new economy is what you want. You don't want the old economy. But in 2000 to 2002, investors who stayed with these models did very well. In fact, a lot of those companies went up because they had been just ignored in the late 90s. And food companies and railroads and real estate investment trusts, and then real estate started to take off. These old fuddy-duddy companies, brick and mortar, you might have heard the brick phrase brick and mortar, as opposed to internet-based retailers. They did pretty well. What about 2008? No. Everybody fell down in 2008. So, excuse me. Here is the purest incarnation. Now, didn't I warn you? Do you need to have a scientific calculator with exponentiation? Didn't I warn you? You don't need that. So don't worry about it. Doesn't it look scary? It looks scary. Not that scary. The value of the stock is equal to the present value of all the expected future dividend payments. So what this formula is trying to say is price at time zero, in other words, today, that's a fancy way of saying, this is what, when you get to the university, this is what they use, P sub zero, means today's price. Instead of putting the market price, it's P sub zero. And it's equal to dividend sub one, which means the dividend in the first year, divided by one plus K. Now what's K stand for? How many baseball fans? Baseball? Strikeout. Yes, baseball is a strikeout. But no, it's not baseball. It stands for what we want from our stock. What is our required rate of return? Are we looking for 5%? Are we looking for 8%? Are we looking for 12% or 15%? Are you with me? That's what K stands for. And so the price is equal to the dividend in the first year divided by 1 plus our required rate of return, plus the dividend in the second year divided by 1 plus the required rate of return squared, because now it's 2 years, and the dividend in year number 3 divided by 1 plus K to the third, because now it's 3 years, and so forth and so on as time gets farther out. So the book uses, yes? No, it's what you expect. It's always the same. I say, I want 5% from the stock, or I want 8% from the stock, or I want 10%. And that's what you plug in. You don't change it every year. Although there's a model later on that does. After a few years, it switches to another one. But don't worry. Yeah, you know, it's a good question. No, K is constant. And so the book uses this really stupid example of a company that pays 3 annual dividends of $100 and then disappears. Goes out of business, or I don't know what happens to it. But that's not a very good, it's not a good example, but that's what they use. And so if you plug in the numbers, and with a required rate of 15%, which I think is outrageously expensive, you take $100 divided by 1.15, plus $100 divided by 1.15 squared, 1 plus K, and $100 divided by 1 plus 1.15 to the third power, and you get about $228. So if we knew we were going to get 3 annual payments of $100 and we required a 15% rate of return and the company would then promptly go out of business, we would want to pay $228 for this. It would be worth it to us. That's our valuation. Make sense? No. Okay, that's all right. How many companies pay 3 annual dividends and then go out of business? Plus, we keep using this term, present value. What does present value mean? I like it when someone says, what the hell does present value mean? I like it when students, most people, when you talk about things, in the other class, I'll do the same. I'll talk about click cars. And I won't tell them what I'm saying. And they just kind of listen. Oh, yeah, sure, what's the click card? So what the hell is present value? Present value, dear students, is the value today of a lump sum or series of payments to be received at some future value. Now, in the 121 class, we learn about how much, if we put money away today, what's it going to be worth to us in the future? That's future value. And they put it in the book, the present value, but I don't need to show it. I mean, I show it to the students, but I don't want you to worry about it because it's not, you don't have to worry about it then. You got to start saving now. But when we invest, we want to know what that future value is worth to us today, because that tells us how much we want to invest. When we're doing the investments, it's the opposite of the future value. There's just two sides of the same coin. And if you did the future value calculations, you use the table, and that's exactly what we're going to do now. You don't have to use exponentiation, because all we're going to do is look it up in the table. And this is a lump sum example. If you go to your table and go across to 10 years and 8%, you will see that the present value is 0.463. You see that, the table I just gave you? Go across the 10% down, I'm sorry, 10, yeah, go across the 8% down 10 years. Do you see 0.463? Well, the inverse of that is 2.1489. So if we put $10,000, in other words, put it over 1, if you 1 divided by 0.43632. If you put $10,000 today at 8%, in 10 years it'll become $21,589. But if you knew you were going to get $21,589 and you required 8% return, then today you'd be willing to put $10,000 into that investment. You see how they're two sides of the same coin? What would you rather have? $10,000 today or $21,589 in 10 years? If your rate of return is 8%, if your required expected rate of return is 8%, you don't care. They are identical. You could take $10,000 today or $21,589. If you require an 8% rate of return. Now, if you require a 10%, the number is going to be different. If you require a 5%, you see? And that is why valuations are all over the map, depending on who you talk to, because everybody comes to the table expecting something different. Make sense? Okay, good. Present value and future value are just two sides of the same coin. In finance, present value tells us what the future value is worth to us today. So did the formula for the dividend discount model scare you? Yeah? Don't worry about it. We mortals use the present value tables, okay? That's all we do. So the dividend in year number one is $100, right? Go across to 15% and down 1 year, and what's that number? Here it is. It's on this page. I'm sorry. Okay. So here, the present value for number one, for year number one, present value for number two, present value for year number three, here it is. Let's do the same example over again, but using the present value tables that are on your hot little hands. Again, three annual dividends of $100 per share, required rate of return of 15%, which I think is way too high. And so what's the first present value multiplier? 15%, 1 year? You see it? Go look. You have to do this. Yeah? So $100 times 8.87 is $87. For year number two at 15%? Okay, good. $100 times 0.756 is $75.60. And $100 times the year number three multiplier, 0.685, $65.80. You add those three up and you get very similar to what we did. Why? Because of round off. We only have 3 digits of accuracy, and if you do use the exponentiation, they use 20 digits of accuracy, so we're 8 cents off. What is the present value of the future stream of dividends? About 15%, $100 in 1 year is worth today $87. $100 in 2 years is worth to us $75.60. $100 in 3 years is worth $65.80. Cool? So now, what we're going to do is we're going to start building. We're going to use that model and start building. These are just a few of the dozens and dozens of things you can go out there and find. But we're going to start building. And in the simplest form, that series of summations boils down to a single formula when the dividend is not growing. When the dividend is not growing, it is very simple. We simply take the annual dividend divided by the required rate of return. And that's what the whole thing boils down to. So let's say a company is paying us $3 in dividends and has not been growing those dividends. Those dividends have been constant. Then what we do is we divide the $3 per share by our required rate of return. And you understand that our required rate of return is what we want. Somebody might want more, somebody might want less. Right? So here is a company paying $3 a share at a required rate of return of 6%, 0.06. If you do that, you or we would be willing to pay $50 for this stock. Make sense? Okay, so now let's take a look at what this really is. It's simply another way to view the dividend yield. If you remember from Chapter 5, and I want you to do those worksheets because it might be on the exam and we'll review on Tuesday or next Thursday, depending on what we get done today. And then annual dividends divided by the market price is the dividend yield. So what we did is we just swapped the dividend yield with our required rate of return and the market price with the value of the stock. That's all we did. So investors who emphasize the zero growth model are valuing the stock almost exclusively for its dividend yield. They're saying, all I care about, I don't care if the company goes up in value, I just want those dividend payments. Make sense? Would you want to buy a stock that stock price didn't go up or went up just a tiny bit? If it were paying 5-6% and you were happy with 5-6%, yeah, you wouldn't mind buying that stock. So here's a real-life example, folks. Consolidated Edison. And they picked the stock symbol long before Viagra came out. ED. Maybe I'm not talking about it. Don't worry about it. Viagra jokes are really the worst jokes. Did you hear that a gang of criminals stole a shipment of Viagra? Yes. I told you this already? Oh, I told you. Forget it. Did you hear that they were used? No, I won't. That's any more. I can get that one. All right. The current market price on the 20th of February, $63.75. It's currently paying $2.60 per year and has been paying that pretty consistently for years. So the question for us is, what is our required rate of return? If the required rate of return is 8%, $2.60 divided by 0.08, if you do it on your calculator, you'll find that we would be willing to pay $32.50. But what's the price? Is this a good deal for us? No, not really. We think it's worth $32.50, and they're charging the market is charging us almost $64. What if we lowered our required rate of return to 5%? Then 2.60 divided by 5%, 0.05, is $52, and the stock is still too expensive. We would have to lower our required rate of return to 4.1% if we were going to buy the stock just based on the growth, the zero growth of dividends. Make sense? Okay, number four. Number four is exactly the same as what we just did. The only difference is it's not a real company. And on the assignment sheet, which I could pass out today, and on worksheet number two, and on the exam, the problems will be in the exact same order. How's that? Can I make it any simpler? So let's take a look at problem number four. Come on, sweetheart. Okay. And so who will read problem number four? All right, I'll read it. Who is it? Indiana? Indiana Electric Company, which is not really their electric company, pays $1.25 a year in dividends. $1.25 a year in dividends. Now, what's our required rate of return? Yeah, and we expect to continue doing it. It's a power company. Do utilities grow? tiny little bit. No, they're very, very stable. So if we require 6%, then how do we value it? Using the zero growth model? See, this is the poster child for the zero growth model, utilities. You take $1.25 divided by 0.06, and what should we expect this stock to be worth? $28.83. $20. I'm sorry. That's about right. That makes more sense. So did I give you a price? It doesn't say what price it is. But let's say it was selling for $24. Would it be a good value? Not for us, no. It wouldn't be a good value. What if it were selling for $18? Yeah, we'd say, hey, this is a pretty good value. Make sense? Okay, good. I hope you enjoy this. I love it. Questions? All right, so now, you guys are in for a treat. Because this is why, you know, people get so excited about Tesla and Apple and all the companies that are growing. But here are companies that are boring. Have you ever heard? Oh, no, we haven't got there. We have to look at the constant perpetual. What a silly name. The constant perpetual growth model. I mean, doesn't constant and perpetual mean the same thing? Don't they mean the same thing? It reminds me of the Department of Redundancy Department. Department of Redundancy. Anyway, the constant perpetual growth model assumes that dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate perpetually. It's a great word. You get to spit on your friends. Perpetuity. Perpetually. Into the future. And it's the same formula that we just worked on, except what we do is we add these parts to account for the fact that the dividend is growing. You see, if you put in zero, then 1 + 0 is 1. And if you subtract something from zero, you get the same thing. So if the growth is zero, then essentially that's what you get, which was the zero growth model. But many companies have been growing their dividends. And the book uses an example of $10 per share. A company paying us $10 per share and has been growing their dividend at 5%. So if we require a rate of return of 15%, which is way too high in my humble opinion, but let's say we do, then plugging in the numbers, $10 times 1 plus the 5% growth rate divided by the 15% that we require minus the 5%, and that's 0.15 to minus 0.05 or 0.1, so if you multiply that, you get $10.50 divided by 0.1, or $105. We would think that this company is worth about $105. Then we'd have to go out to the market and see what the market is charging for it. But that would be our benchmark. Make sense? Okay, so now, have you ever heard of a company called 3M? Minnesota Mining and Materials is what it used to be called, but in the 60s they had to change it. All these companies changed it. Aluminum Corporation of America became Alcoa. Exxon used to be Esso, which used to be Standard Oil, S-O, Standard Oil, S-O, then it was Exxon. Now it's Exxon. Okay, so Minnesota Mining and Materials, one of the 30 stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Oh, by the way, did you notice that AT&T was taken out of the Dow, is being taken out of the Dow, and they're putting Apple in. That means Apple's going to crash. I am sure of it, folks. If history is any guide, they put it in the Dow just when Apple's ready to crash. That's any time that's happened. It doesn't mean it will happen, but that's what I think. It's the kiss of death. It's the kiss you die. Okay. So on the 20th of February, the stock was selling for $168.12. It's currently paying $4.10 annual dividend. And let's assume that it's been growing their dividend at 8% a year. Okay, let's assume that they've been growing their dividend at 8% per year. Plugging in the numbers, and let's do it together, $4.10 of dividends times 1 plus the growth rate. What's the growth rate? 8% or 1.08 divided by our required rate of return. Now, what if our required rate of return is 13%? And what did I say about 13%? It's too high. But let's use 13% minus the 8%. That's 0.13. That's a minus 9, Frank. A minus 0.05. So $4.10 times 1.08, do you get
Come on, come on, do it. Make sure you do it. $4.42. Is that what you get? $4.42. Eight, whatever, whatever the numbers are. And then 0.13 minus 0.08. If you answer me, it'll go faster. We'll get out of here soon. 0.05, right? So what do we get? Yeah, this is selling for $168. You with me? But what if we just reduced our required rate of return to 10%? Would you be happy with 10%? I'd be happy with 10%. If we just reduced our required rate of return to 10%, then you plug in the numbers and you wind up with $221. You see, the model is very sensitive to our choice of required rate of return. Just changing the required rate of return, just a few percentage points, and the valuations swing way up and down. Do you think 3M is a good value? Okay, good. How about Procter & Gamble? Hasn't been our disappointment, has it? It's down 10% since we bought it. But hey, are people going to stop using soap, toothpaste, diapers, toilet paper, shampoo, shaving cream? No, I don't think so either. Their problem is they're trying to go out into the world now. You know, they're really big in the United States, and they're trying to go global now. They've been global, but now they're really making a big push. At the same time, the dollar is strengthening, and the global markets are in a funk. International markets are in a funk, so bad timing. But if you take a long-term view, that's actually good timing. The current market price was $84.87 on the 20th of February, and it's currently paying $2.57 in annual dividends. Again, let's assume that the dividends are growing about 8% per year. Our required rate of return is 13%. So if we plug in the numbers, the stock is worth $55.51 at 13%, which is But if we reduce our required rate of return to 10%, then the model is saying the company is worth almost $140. At 10%, our model says that Procter & Gamble is undervalued. Yay? Okay. Next one. Coca-Cola. I don't like this company. They're very, very good. And what do they do? What is Coca? You don't know? You've heard of Coke? Yeah. They feed you fizzy sugar water, brown crayon stuck in it, dipped in it, and give you diabetes. Okay. $41.97 and currently paying $1.32 in dividends. Again, assume the dividends are growing at 8%. If our required rate of return is 13%, the stock should be worth $28.50. But if we simply lower our rate of return to 10%, our required rate of return, what we want from the stock, then we believe it's worth $71. I have a hard time believing this, but the average American drinks 400 Cokes a year. That's more than one a day. You don't believe that? That's from Coca-Cola's website. I don't drink any, so somebody's drinking 800. And in China, 20 years ago, it was 1 or 2. Now it's 38. In India, it was 0 20 years ago. Now it's 12. Who drink the most Coca-Cola? Mexico! Over 700. You go down to Mexico, and they all drink Coca. It's more sugary, isn't it? Sweeter. Yeah. Has cane sugar, yeah. Oh, well, and you know what Mexico has a hard time with? Diabetes. Okay. All right, let's continue. You ever hear of GE? General Electric? Member of the Dow since 1896? Currently, oh, actually, February 20th, $25.21, paying 92 cents annually, and let's assume that the dividends are growing at 8%. What if our required rate of return is 13%, then the stock is worth about $20, and we don't think it's a great value, but again, we lower our value, our required rate of return, and the value jumps up to almost $50. So if we're happy with 10%, GE appears to be a great deal. But what happened? Many people think of GE, they think of industrials. They think of lighting systems, power plants. They make jet engines and elevators. Oh, no, they make the engines. They make the motors of elevators. But in 2007, they were making more money off of their financials. They have an insurance company. They have several credit companies. They have leasing companies. And those companies got hammered in the 2008 financial meltdown. And so they dropped their dividend that they had been growing for decades from $1.24, was it? $1.24 down to 40 cents. But when the economy started coming back, they started raising their dividend. 48 cents, and then 56 cents, 60, 68, 76. And this is only in the last few years, folks, since 2010. They're now up to 92 cents a year. And guess who bought $5 billion of GE when the economy crashed? Warren Buffett, right, exactly.
That's just an assumption.
Yeah.
Yeah,
hang on.
Okay.
Yeah, you caught me. Okay, hang on a minute. My conscience is here. Okay, it's going to come, too. It's going to come. Hang on. We're going to all shall be revealed. Because we only got one more stock to look at. Have you ever heard of Altria? We bought Philip Morris. Philip Morris International is the company that sells the Virginia cigarettes outside the United States. Altria is the company that sells them here. And their current price was $55.61. Currently paying $2.08 in annual dividends, and if we plug in the numbers, at 13%, $44.93, but at 10%, $112. What a buy! If you ignore the potential tobacco-related lawsuit, and the fact that tobacco kills 400,000 Americans every year, would you buy a company whose product, when used as directed, kills its consumers? Yes, of course you would. And you'd be very happy to. Because those imbeciles, no one's putting a gun to them. Actually, they do. They don't do it here anymore because they're not allowed to. But do they market to kids? They just they know who starts smoking. It's 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds. It's not 20 years old. Okay, so would you buy Altria? Okay, well, let's continue. Hey, who's that? Who is that?
Yeah,
I'm here. Who are you?
You know who it is.
It's Yvette, my conscience.
Come clean.
Come clean about what?
Fess up.
Fess up about what?
Where did you get the assumed dividend growth?
I made them up. All these companies are growing their dividends at faster than 8% a year.
That's better.
Here's my conscience over here. You see, the constant perpetual growth model is very sensitive to the assumed growth rate of dividends. The recent dividend growth rates of Coke, Procter & Gamble, 3M, Altria are all currently higher than 8%. Coke is 8.8, PG is 8.8, 3M is 8.9, and Altria is 10.2, and GE is about 18%, but that's an unusual situation. But the model doesn't work when the required rate of return is equal to or less than the dividend growth rate. If you take 10 minus 10%, what happens? You get division by zero, which your calculator said error. Therefore, what we should do is actually raise our expected rates of returns for all these companies. All these companies are actually better buys than what the model is telling us for our 10% or 13% rate of return. But these are all blue chip companies with long histories of rising dividends. There ain't that many of them, folks, but they're not alone. ExxonMobil, McDonald's, which is in a funk now because people are starting to realize this stuff is garbage. United Technologies, Honeywell, Johnson Controls, Yum Brands, which is still garbage. Who is Yum? You know what Yum is, brand? Taco Smell, Kentucky Fried Rat, and Pizza Craft. Okay? And they were doing gangbusters. They got hit by a few different things. China, they're kicking McDonald's butt. So this is why. Now is it starting to make sense why I try to get you to think about the companies that people think, oh, they're boring. Because one, they've been around for 100 years. They're going to be around for 100 years. Who knows? Maybe McDonald's will go out of business because people will realize that they're buying garbage. But these companies are the rarefied air. Make sense? Okay, good. All right, so now what we're going to do now is do problem number 5. Problem number 5, which is on the back page. continuing with our Pritchard's Pretty Good Pretzels, is currently paying 85 cents in dividends. And they have been growing their dividend constantly. When you see that word constant, you know, they've been growing constantly. You know which one to use, right? 4% dividend growth rate. Growth rate. Now, what's our required rate of return? 9%. That's our K, our required rate of return. So how do we plug in the numbers? What's the dividend yield? Not yield, dividends. 85 times 1 plus the growth rate. 4% or 0.04. So 1.04 divided by our required rate of return, 9%, minus the dividend growth rate, 4%. So that's 0.09 minus 0.04. So 0.85 times 1.04, what number do you get? 4. We did great, folks, and you should congratulate yourself. Now you're going to go listen to this again, right? Listen to it again. It's the we did the first two presentations online, so you can listen to the online presentations. Do the worksheet. I'm going to pass out worksheet number 2. We're going to do worksheet number 2. We're going to finish up discounted cash flow models, and we should be ready for the exam next Thursday. We'll see, but I want you to study this, folks. This is college. Please study. Okay, so what's the answer? What'd you get? 0.85 times 1.04? 0.884 divided by 0.05. And so what should we say this company is worth? $17.68. Does it say how much it's selling for? No. It doesn't say how much it's selling for. And that we use the dividend, we use the constant perpetual growth model. Okay, so you got time over this week to study? Because I'm going to give you worksheet number 2, which are actual real companies, by the way. These are phony companies, but in worksheet number 1. But worksheet number 2 is actual real companies. Okay. Questions, thoughts, ideas? I get so excited over this stuff. And people go, oh yeah, okay, really exciting. Because wait till you see next Tuesday. Spoiler alert, folks, next Tuesday you are going to learn the most powerful, in my humble opinion, most powerful model there is for any type of investment. Doesn't matter if it's stocks or bonds or anything. Need some more? Questions, thoughts, ideas, comments? All right. So those of you who want to stick around and ask more questions, stick around. The rest of you, next Tuesday, folks. This is exciting. Uh-oh, Adam, don't forget your... Okay, who snuck in late? I need to keep you...